Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks, the Monday edition. It's the 20th day of July, 2020. I'm David Ellis with you up until 2 o'clock today. Because we have all of this time, sometimes I like to set the stage for the day's program by sharing information with you. As we speak, we have evolving situations with Liat, and we also have the situation in Guyana, which continues to be a matter of concern for various people. But at home, I want to put the focus, first of all, today on COVID-19. And I'm going to share with you maybe a little bit for the first 39, 30, 40 minutes of the program, a mix of information. I'm going to give you an update from Jamaica. Then we're going to look at what's happening in the United States. I'm going to share a comment which was put on social media this morning by Dr. Adrian Lord. And then we are going to go across to that meeting that was held last night in St. Philip, where the Minister of Health spoke. And coming out of that, I'm hoping that we will also be able to get some comment from the people who have been monitoring the COVID situation in Barbados. In particular, I'm trying to see if I can reach Richard Carter, the COVID czar. So let's share with you, first of all, what we picked up out of Jamaica this morning.
Jamaica has recorded 16 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the latest round of testing, making it the largest single-day increase in weeks. In a statement on Sunday, the health ministry said 14 of the new cases are imported, all of whom arrived recently on flights from the United States. Two of the 14 cases have since repatriated. The two other new cases are contacts of imported cases. This brings the country's total number of confirmed COVID-19 cases to 790.
As COVID rages, President Trump does not see the threat as a firestorm.
We have embers. And we do have flames. Florida became more flame-like, but it's going to be under control.
Frustrated by soaring cases.
Many of those cases are young people that would heal in a day. They have the sniffles, and we put it down as a test.
He claims testing itself makes the situation appear worse.
We find cases, and many of those cases heal automatically. We're finding, in a way, we're creating trouble.
While the president boasts about testing capacity,
we have the most and finest testing anywhere in the world.
Today, the NIH director said results must come back faster. The average is about 3 days.
But in some places, it's as long as a week. And that really undercuts the value of the testing.
In the Fox News Sunday interview, the president, who often criticizes experts' mistakes, was pressed about his own.
I'll be right eventually. I will be right eventually. You know, I said it's going to disappear. I'll say it again.
Does that discredit
and
you?
I'll be right.
Even as the president says the coronavirus will eventually disappear, the numbers today continue to rise in hotspots across the country. In South Carolina, a record number of new infections were reported today. And in Florida, for the fifth straight day, new cases topped 10,000. Here's NBC's Sam Brock.
On Miami Beach's famed Ocean Drive, it's casual activity by day, party over by night.
Everything shut down. It's not, you know, at 8 o'clock.
The 8 o'clock curfew, the earliest in South Florida.
We've seen larger crowds coming out to Miami Beach, not adhering to social distancing guidelines, not wearing face covers.
Tonight, Florida's numbers continuing to pace the country. Nearly 12,500 more infections Sunday pushed the total to 350,000. Miami-Dade temporarily stopped reporting the percent of people testing positive. At last check, 27%. Telling NBC News, in part, its officials are meeting with State Department of Health statisticians on Monday to go over discrepancies. While the numbers tell a story, so does the eye test. And street parties like this Osceola County affair last weekend have officials extremely concerned. Things getting worse, not just in Florida, but other hotspots like Houston, too.
More than half of the beds in the Texas Medical Center are COVID-positive patients right now.
Texas notching record numbers.
Morning, Dr. Adrian Lord, family physician on the front line. Today is Monday, July the 20th. And we have lots to say, and I'm not sure if I can be able to say it all this morning, so I might hit you repeatedly during the week. But as I said, it's not my day job, you know, so if I don't, just forgive me. Where's the czar? Everybody asking me, telling me about these things at these various restaurants and in Old Town and in on the West Coast, in St. Lawrence Gap. Don't talk to me, ask the czar. I haven't seen the czar recently. So CBC called the czar today, let him talk. David Ellis called the czar. I want to hear from him what's going on. And there's a COVID monitoring unit. Who's monitoring? What is being monitored? People are seeing things that they don't like. We Bahamas just closed off the borders to the U.S. They had 15 cases in one day. They had false COVID-19 certificates being brought in from the U.S. So they shut up shop. We effectively have done that because JetBlue is no longer flying in, and American is going to come something next month. So people, we need to get things in place. I have some situations, some facts that I got over the weekend, which could be a little disturbing and frightening, and I don't want to alarm people, but you know, we have 105 cases. We got one more case yesterday, 7 deaths. I have now been told officially that all 7 were diabetics. All 7 deaths were diabetics. But a lot of the, some of them also had high blood pressure, at least 2 of them had high blood pressure. Some had hypothyroidism, low thyroid levels associated with the death as well. Some of them complained or were diagnosed with hypovolemia, low blood volume, hypotension, hypoxia, which is low oxygen levels, confusion. There was one person who got confused. They had acute kidney injury in some of the cases. Thrombosis, and I have some notes here that I'm looking down. Please excuse. But pneumonia, within 5 days of being diagnosed with COVID-19, we had persons with pneumonia. So the pneumonia comes on 5 days after being diagnosed, 5 to 10 days. And after 12 days, if you don't get pneumonia, you're doing well. You wouldn't get pneumonia. We've used in Barbados a number of treatments. Remdesivir was used. I didn't even know that was here. Yes, the drug service has remdesivir. We have used remdesivir in some patients. We've used hydroxychloroquine, was used along with azithromycin. So we have used a lot of this stuff. There are 32, I think it is, ICU beds, but initially they didn't have enough ICU nurses to monitor the persons. And you know, one of the things that they told me over the weekend is that, you know, when they're in these hazmat suits, imagine, how can they put stethoscopes in the air and listen to the patients? That is a problem. They have to use ultrasounds to listen to the heart and the lungs and so on. It is not an easy condition to treat. So why I'm saying all of this is that you need to prevent it. We need to contain this thing. COVID-19 is no joke. COVID-19 has not gone to sleep, people. COVID-19 is not on holiday. It's here in Barbados. And I repeatedly told you that you need to protect yourself. Wear your mask. Physical distancing. Well, we see the czar, he's physically distanced from us because we haven't heard from him recently. But physical distancing. I'm just joking here, czar. Physical distancing, hand washing. Okay. We need to keep doing those things. Right? Wear your mask. And wear your mask properly.
Now, after all of that, we're going to let you hear from Health Minister Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick as he spoke at a branch meeting in St. Philip last night.
Last week, Sunday, we were awaiting the arrival of the first commercial flight into Barbados after the onset of COVID. And for some reason, I thought that I had to speak at Rice's St. Philip. I ended up first of all at Brereton, Plainfield. And then realized, man, I'm in the wrong place. I then drove back up and I came here, called in Indar. Why are you saying the cars on the people? To discover that I had the wrong date. So then I said to myself, I have to take the Prime Minister advice, but I really turned. But I'm glad that I'm here today to share with you. And to share with you because it is important going forward that we have a lot of conversations with the public of Barbados, because nothing that we plan in terms of fighting this fellow called COVID will be successful unless we have the buy-in of each and every Barbadian and each and every resident here. I'm going to make my address as crisp and as short as possible because I actually want to hear from you in terms of questions or anything that you have, because we really have to be able to clarify things going forward, because I recognize that in a lot of cases, there are a lot of people who just do not understand what is happening, and so they are coming to their own conclusions. But in order for me to say where we go from here with COVID, I have to take you back a little to when we started. Because to be honest with you, the last six months and everything that has happened is what is going to help us to go forward and to go into some waters that we may not want to go, but we have to go. And from day one, the first thing that was very, very obvious to the team at the Ministry of Health and Wellness back in January was that this thing was developing in such a way that we recognize that this country does not have all of the resources to fight the enemy called COVID. And it's the same kind of situations that every one of you will face in your own homes. When you don't have all the resources, you have to take some risk. But you take risks that you can manage. So you may decide this month, boy, you're going to hold back on your water bill because I'm going to cut me off. Let me pay something else. And you know how you juggle, especially mothers, because mothers were juggling in this country for the best economies in this country. Are with me, you know? Tell you. I grew up with my mother telling you about stretching a meal, boy. So I know. So we recognize that. So we had to take some risks, but we had to be able to manage those risks. But the strength of our efforts really was based on the strength of the public health care system in Barbados. People fret and they quarrel sometimes, but we have one of the best public health care systems in the world. So we were starting from a position of weakness in that sense. We were starting from a position of strength. We recognized then that the effort would require not only the Ministry of Health. In fact, I can say to you that we took it a certain distance. And when we got to that point, it's when I, as minister, approached the Prime Minister and he said, Prime Minister, we now have to take this thing at a higher level because this thing goes way beyond health. This thing affects everything you can think about. And so we had to involve all ministries, all departments, hold hands with opposition parties in this country, with the churches, the labor, NGOs, and then walk hand in hand with every citizen of this country. That is how we had to do it. And like I say, we did not have enough of anything. And we had to pull together, and we did. We managed the risk. And we have been successful so far in managing those risks. And that is how we have to face this thing now going forward. We've managed the risk. And I would say to you, I keep saying this to people all the time so that they would understand that we are on top of the game. We knew when this country had to go to lockdown. Because the figures and the statistics and everything that was happening in Barbados, we knew we were about to get into some very troubling waters. in less than 1 month, I think it was March, we had most of the cases, 73. We were at 92 for a long time. We didn't have any cases until we had some imported cases, and I'll get to those, but we were at 92 or 93. And out of those, about 76 of those cases occurred in March, less than a month. And 43 of the 76 occurred in a 2 week period. Well, that was enough evidence that we needed to lock down. In other words, when you know your capacity, you know how many beds you have, how many this, how many that, you don't wait till you're overrun. When you get to a certain point that you're beginning to become stretched, is when you have to take the corrective action and corrective measures so that you do not become overrun. And that is what we did then, and that is what we have to do going forward. One thing that I learned throughout this entire experience, and I don't think people really got it. I remember when we were still allowing cruise ships and so on. People, some in the Caribbean also thought we were mad. Like, we were not mad. Is that we knew very well we had to wait till the last moment before we could lock down. Why? Because too many people would have gone without work, without money, without food. Too many families would have been affected. And we would have had a pandemic inside the pandemic. We would have had a situation where we had 90-something cases. I think we have 105 now. Can't remember the net figures these days. But the point is, we knew we could manage those. Regrettably, unfortunately, 7 Barbadian souls passed in this process. But we were able to manage. If we had a situation where people could not eat, didn't have money to do anything, we would have had, and we did have a bit of it, but we would have had some serious social problems in this country that would have been worse than the pandemic. So we had to make those judgment calls. Now, it's funny that we were probably the last country in the Caribbean, CARICOM, to lock down. But you know, all the others were the fastest to reopen. We were the last. Right? Because they got it. They got it late, but they got it. And the funny thing is that they reopened when the situation was far worse than when they locked down. But the point is that there's a balance in that. The country must breathe. You, the people, all of us, we must be able to live. We don't know when this thing is going to end, so you can't play dead. You can't let paralyze you. You got to work with it, live with it, and you got to be smart. And you got to look after yourself and your family and your neighbors and be responsible. That is what is going to be required going forward. So we had to open. We never closed our borders, by the way. We never did. It's just that the airlines stopped flying. And it all started for us, I can tell you, because when we started to get the spike, they were so obvious that most of these people were coming from the United States and by JetBlue. And when this minister got wind that there were 3 JetBlue flights looking to come one day at the post stamps, get word to them and tell them whoever come, they're going to quarantine for 14 days straight from airport. So they didn't want to fly anymore. And that's why they stopped. But it was necessary. Because at the end of the day, they have to look after the country and its people. So that is what we have to do now going forward. As we speak, there's a Air Canada flight in that is being processed. We had the largest flight yesterday, which was the first flight from the United Kingdom. That was British Airways. Caribbean Airlines, they're flying again also. JetBlue has been restricted to 1 flight per week out of New York. And people need not fear New York as much now, because New York is performing better than all the other states. They've leveled off. Things are looking pretty good there now. the flight, American Airlines, they were supposed to start in, at first, I think it was August, and then we pushed it back to September. And now we, no, it was July, sorry. July, we pushed it to August, September, but really and truly, that is suspended until further notice. Because if things don't clean up, especially with them flying out of Miami, yes. Nowhere was there. That is really what it is. We have to protect these borders. So we had to come up with some ways and means as to how best we can manage the risk of allowing commercial flights in. So what we decided, we have categorized countries as risks. Low risk, medium risk, high risk. Hot spots. Right now the United States is the hot spot. And Colombia, Brazil, considered to be hot spots. India, we get people coming in from India as well. So if you come from one of those countries, you have to be quarantined for 7 days. If you present with a valid COVID test, and they got all fake tests in the state, so we know what we're looking for. Valid. We know when it's valid. Everything valid, it ain't valid. You can take it here, and if you don't take it here, you're going back. Because we have to be careful in exactly what it is we're doing. So that is, all that is in place. And persons, once you arrive, if you take the test here, right now you remain at the airport till whenever the results come back. We've also made some arrangements. The Crane has agreed, they're doing some testing. They have a team out there that will swap. All the tests go to the one lab. But if you're getting it done at the Crane, then you remain in your room until the results are back. And why? Like, we had a case this morning coming out of the same UK British Airways. That person was taken from the airport straight to Harrison Point. Go past jail. Don't collect the $200. Go straight to Harrison Point. And that is the way that we will be able to contain this, because we don't want you mixing up with people and then we have to find you and then look for them. So it is restricted. We also had a second case today, but that was an in-transit passenger going to Grenada. Came in on British Airways. But we made a decision that if you're in transit, you have to come here with a test. And if you don't come with a test, you're going to get the test here. If you miss your flight, that is at you. But we tell you early, come with a test. And the reason why we've done that is, in this case, for example, the person went out, yeah, they left on a private jet. The result came back this morning. But because we did that, we know that this person was positive. So we then were able to trace where they went in the airport and who they would have met and so forth. And those persons at the airport would have been well protected in any event. But what I'm saying is that is the kind of detail that we are looking at to try not to expose too many people to this virus through third parties, people coming in. Also, I can say to you that all of the persons so far that have tested positive on our account, they are all Barbadians returning on those commercial flights. And I know some people say, well, you do that with, let them stay, let them do this and that. But nah, man, we don't work so. They're Barbadians, even if they have COVID and they could get here, we can take them. And we have the facilities that we could bring them back to good, healthy life and living. And they're in a country in the world that can take care of Barbadians who sick better than we. So they're welcome here anytime. And all it is, it means that the numbers will go up, but those are statistics, man. We're dealing with human beings like us, and Bajans like us, our cousins and brothers and uncles and aunts. And that is what matters. So the numbers don't matter right now in that sense. So those are the things that we have going forward. we've been allowing some people to quarantine at home, and it's because the reality is when these flights really start, we're gonna run out of space to quarantine people, and you have to take some chances. We were doing it like this when we started with China. People were quarantining at home. Most people have been responsible. You will always get one or two people who don't act responsibly. But that is how life is, and we have to be able to manage that. I always say to people, look, it does not matter so much about visitors and who come into this country. The real truth is that it is up to us, you know. If we all do what we're supposed to do, in other words, you think that somebody could got a big fat down there with 5,000 people that they shouldn't have? And are you going? No. If you get up in a minivan or a bus, a transport board bus, and it overlooks you, you ain't getting in. These are the kind of things that we have to do. And I know it was a serious challenge for Barbadians when we went on the lockdown. And regrettably, the first one, we did not quite get that right in terms of the supermarkets and things, because that could have been done better, and it was done better. So when we had the large numbers that invaded the supermarkets on that first morning, you know, I panicked. I said, Lord have mercy, what happened here now? But the truth is, I know people were angry and all of that, but we must not be angry. I tell you why. I sat down and I studied this thing carefully, and I realized, you know something? Except for people who might have done it, oh, you know, the majority of Barbadians had never had a lockdown or a curfew.
True.
It's not easy for people to just shut down and stand home and not be able to do this and that. So you had to expect and accept that you're going to have a few little things that you have to deal with. And that was the reality of it. We have never had a period of time when you can't go out. In fact, if electricity goes for a day, everybody crying. There are people in other countries that have hurricanes and the electricity goes for months, but we have not had that experience. Our people are not accustomed to that. And so that is why we have to go hand in hand. But I'll tell you what, the vast majority of Barbadians were responsible. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't really just focus on the few who were playing, doing nonsense. And that is what is going to keep us together going forward and help us to fight this pandemic. Because this fella ain't going away. Don't mind, I can't even call him. But you know the fella in another country to the north. This ain't going away. I would love for us to have a vaccine tomorrow, next week. But we have to live with this in the same way that we live with the flu. Comes every year, you have it. But we can beat it by not retreating or not surrendering to it. Living with it, changing how we do things. I will tell you the gospel truth. You see this thing called a mask? Well, I hate this. I don't. But we don't have a choice. And once people continue to wash, sanitize, don't get involved. If you someplace and you see tourists, and I'm not saying this in any disrespectful way, and you hear people sneezing and things, get away. No, I'm serious. It's up to us. Protect yourself. And once we do these things, man, we're going to overcome this, you know. We will. We will overcome this. But we have now, I passed, I think it was in Grings, cricket match was on. And when I passed that pass, I said, well, Lord, well, there's a lot of carriers out here, a lot of people. But I recognize it was perhaps the first match since
a long time,
the lockdown. And I know that people are concerned that some people not wearing masks, people not doing this, people not doing that. The truth is, yes, I've seen it. But except for the ones who have brought it in recently, I know within my heart we don't have it. I know the time will come, and maybe within the next week, we're not locking down or anything, but we have to start repeating the things so that people would get back to doing the right thing so that you don't drop your guard. But at the end of the day, you have to give the people a little time to breathe. Can't keep locked down and keep it tight all the time, so a little time to breathe. But now is the time that we have to pick it back up. No restrictions in terms of so markets and hours, nothing so at the moment, no. But we need to pick it back up because we are now having people coming from other countries that will be in and intermingling with us. And so we have to be on guard and protect ourselves. So I think that going forward, not I think, I know, we are far better prepared now than we were back in January, February. And the same way that we were able to determine now is the time to put the brakes down and start to lock down, we are treating this period in the same way. Yes, we have, I think it's probably about 6, 7, 8 cases that we had so far. But we're not worried. We're not worried because we have those cases contained. If and when, because I ain't gonna fool you, when we get local transmission, meaning by some interaction, some person gets it or persons get it, then that is when we will start to really zoom in and do what we have to do. And that is what we have to prevent. Or try to prevent. And really and truly, it's not even prevention. Try to delay. Because the reality is, as long as COVID is here, as long as people are coming in, the possibility is there, but we can deal with it. That is the major thing. We can deal with it. So they have no fear, to be honest with you. We are checking everything. We will know the point where we see things starting to happen, where we might have to start putting some brakes on. And we will not be afraid to stop the flights if we believe that things are beginning to get out of hand. And that's the assurance that I give you, the assurance that I give the country as Minister of Health and Wellness. So I will end there. There's a lot more that I can say, but to be honest with you, I'd rather give you the opportunity, any questions or anything that you would like cleared up, I am here and I will give you the best answer that I possibly can. So I'm looking forward to interacting with you. I thank you.
You would have heard that presentation, and we go straight to any questions from the floor. Alan Fields, what's your question?
The one thing I'm really concerned about, the home quarantine, because people don't stay home. That's the one thing I'm bothered about, the home quarantine.
Yeah, and it is a reasonable concern. But I will say this to you. When we first started, like I said, we did not have the quarantine facilities ready. This is when we were dealing with Wuhan and then the whole of China. And we had to do the home quarantine. It worked because you're not just left there. People visit you, get your temperatures and so forth, and people check on you. Is it foolproof? No. Some people who are bent on doing nonsense will still do so. But we have to watch, like I said, the numbers of persons who are coming in. And there are some countries that not only do they do home quarantine, they actually do home isolation if you are not displaying the symptoms, even though you have COVID, right? We are going to be better this time at doing the home quarantine because within this coming week or so, we have an app that is going on cell phones that we'll be able to trace people and know where people are, that sort of stuff, and where they have been along the journey here. And that's not all. We are waiting for the supplier to send in some bracelets that people will be given. We would have had them by now, but we told them we want waterproof bracelets because you can't see it in the sea or in the bath. And you keep it on. If you take it off, we know that you've taken it off. Right? And then if you are in home quarantine, and we had to do this before, and you decide that you're going to play the fool, well, we can pick you up and carry you straight to Paragon. Can't get you one way, can't get you, we get you the next. Right? So, and that is why we brought on also the 60 constituency health officers, because they have been a great help. People who know the communities and can walk about and do what they have to do. And they were very helpful in a recent case, one of them that we had, where an individual was not he did not leave home, but he received visitors. And we were able to, and that is through the community effort. And that worked. And so we have a lot of things that we are going to be doing to ensure that people who are in home quarantine remain in home quarantine. And of course, there's legal action that can be taken by the Emergency Powers Act, right? So we'll be watching it very, very closely. And I think at this point in time, I can say that we are satisfied that it is going well. But I agree with you, it's not 100%, because we can't control people who don't want to be controlled unless you control them legally and otherwise.
Okay. Colonel, you would know, I noticed we are observing the protocols as it is. Any more questions out there? Sure. Bradley.
What you haven't spoken to as yet is the introduction of children back into the school system. Can you update us on the conversation at government level as to where you are in making some decisions there?
Yeah, thanks. Good question. We are working towards schools reopening in September. But of course, that's going to be driven by what is happening in terms of the pandemic. We're relatively confident that we should be able to get a start. The virtual learning thing, I think that is a legacy. That's a good thing going forward. That is a very, very good thing that has happened as a result of COVID. But regrettably, far too many people have been left behind with that form of learning, and we need to be able to get back to the classroom. I think the whole common entrance experience and those who were allowed to go back to school to do exams, the protocols that we've been able to assist the Ministry of Education with in terms of schools, those have gone very well, and I am confident that we can get back. And again, the people thinking out of the box, because here we are outside underneath a tent. So I'm saying that schools that may be cramped for space and things may just have to work things out in this kind of a way. And in some cases, you may just have to stagger some of the classes to be. But there are ways and means of doing it. But the intent is to get back to the classroom. The decision will be taken by the Ministry of Education, but with the advice of the Ministry of Health. You're welcome.
I have a question for past president here.
Hi.
You can go for it.
Yeah. I want to join Brother Haynes in congratulating you on the stern work that was done in the past few months. I worked with your brother a long time at bank, so I wouldn't expect less from you. Very caring person he was. He is. Mm. My question to you, we've recently heard that the after some lobby from Florida, that the United States government might be leveraging on Cuba to prevent the nurses from, you know, traveling through the Caribbean. And I wanted to find out what kind of impact that would have on our own domestic situation here going forward, if that bill is passed in the U.S. Senate.
All right, what the bill is seeking to do is to have countries like Barbados and all the countries that have been taking nurses from Cuba to have us on something of a human trafficking because for some reason. But I'll say this to you. Remember the term friends of all satellites of none. Barbados is a sovereign country, and we make decisions in the interests of our country, just like other countries, large and small, make all of their decisions in the interests of their country. We have engaged the nurses from Cuba. Barbados had diplomatic relations from the 1970s with Cuba when other countries were trying to do the same thing, put pressure, and we are not going to buckle under the pressure of any other nation. We are doing what's in the interest of our people. The nurses will remain here because we expect that we'll have more cases. And we are a tourism-based country, 40% or so of GDP, if not more. And I don't think those people in the United States really understand that we cannot, at this point in time, do without tourism. And the tentacles of tourism reach deep and far, from people bred in here on the beach. There are so many people impacted and affected by this. And the only way that we can facilitate or allow tourism to think is to have the capacity to deal with a spread. And those 100 Cuban nurses, that is what they're here for. They're not here free. The government of Barbados is paying for the service. They have them in several countries in the world. And we will continue to do what is in the interest of Barbados on behalf of the people of Barbados.
Okay, thank you very much. So that was from last night, where the Minister of Health, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostic, spoke to what we would describe as the party faithful. You know how it is. I am asking him if he will make himself available to take questions from members of the public other than just the Barbados Labour Party people, so that sometimes the more challenging questions he will answer, and we will be able to be better satisfied with the position which the government has taken. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Now, Dr. Adrian Lord, let me tell you that I've reached out to the Tsar, Richard Carter. He says that he's happy to be on Brass Tacks, but he wants to join the program when, according to him, when I can speak from a position of knowledge and information, end of quote. And he says this would be following the meeting of the COVID-19 Emergency Operations Center, which is scheduled for the 21st of July, by which time the COVID-19 monitoring unit would have reported. Today is the 20th of July, which means after tomorrow. This person says, good morning. There was a video on the arrival of the passengers from the UK. Now, there was a male who I know from my neighborhood who was seen on the video embracing his partner who returned on that flight. The same flight where one passenger was tested positive. His partner is staying at his home in St. Philip. Yesterday, Sunday, this guy was seen out hiking amongst others and was seen at the supermarket this morning. My question or concern is, shouldn't both of them be in quarantine, especially now that there was a positive case on that flight? That's the kind of question that people want answers to. There are other things that will unfold on this program today. Right now, we felt it absolutely necessary that you should hear all that was said. You are in a position to be better informed about some of the questions that you might have had for government, and I'm sure there will be others. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program. Let's take the first call of the day. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, sir. I am calling about insurance, my insurance company. I am very disillusioned, Mr. Ellis, and I'll tell you why. I have been paying insurance for my house for over 20 years without making a claim. I was told that the policy was comprehensive, and I was given a book that said the building was insured. In March this year, I noticed that my tiles were lifting up. I called the insurance company, and they told me, make a claim online, and I did. And they sent a surveyor to look at the damage. But about 2 weeks passed and nobody said anything. So I called them and the lady told me, send a quote. So I went to the relevant stores and got the quote and I sent it in. Lo and behold, I was told by the insurance company, they don't cover. The quote was only for $5,000. They said, and that includes the war man. They said they don't cover damage to the floor, the tiles. They don't cover that because it's due to wear and tear. So I asked the gentleman, how do you know it is for wear and tear? And because the gentleman who came only took a picture, only looked at it and took a picture. Also, he didn't touch a tile. He didn't turn over anything, the tiles or anything, to look to see what was the cause of the damage. So after I questioned him on that, I asked him if the floor was not a part of the building. When you say you don't cover such damage, because I thought I was covering the entire house. Well, they wrote me a letter and said they're going to send another surveyor. So this time two surveyors came. Mr. Ellis, that is a month ago to date. No word from the insurance company about the status of the claim. All they keep saying is that the surveyors have not sent them a report as yet. I'm wondering if the insurance, 20 years of paying insurance without a claim, and the first time you have one, Mr. Ellis, and the yearly policy is nearly $3,000. The first time you have one in 20 years, for $5,000, the insurance company is playing around and not wanting to settle. I just want to air it, because I want to know if other people in Barbados are suffering that sort of indignity.
Okay, well, you've aired it, and we'll have to listen to hear what other people have to say on the matter. Did you say at the beginning that there was a problem other than wear and tear? You felt that...
No, he said the tiles lifted up. So the
well, they just lifted. Okay, fine.
Yeah, that's all.
He felt it was wear and tear. And that
due to wear and tear.
And for you, wear and tear meant comprehensive coverage.
Well,
once you had comprehensive coverage, it should mean that. Okay.
It says comprehensive coverage, so I don't understand how they arrive at.
The question is in the contract, the agreement with them, did they define comprehensive?
No, they just said comprehensive.
Okay.
I don't remember having any dictionary meaning for comprehensive.
Mm.
You know.
Okay. All right then. Thank you very much for calling. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate your aggression. That's okay. The pandemic within the pandemic. Let me start with last night. I did a little background check as to what a journalist was. Boy, it took pages and pages. But basically, my understanding of what a journalist is or what journalism is all about is bringing information to the public. Whether that information has to do with fashion or court cases or the color of the sky or whatever was said on the platform, once you bring in information to the public, you know, in English, makes you a journalist. My issue, of course, is that parliamentarians bring information to the public. They bring it through their eyes or when they present it to their people. But it's still information. It may be painted in a certain way to make them look popular or doing the correct thing. And so to do doctors, they bring information to the public. It is information, and it would not be brought in such a way to criticize them in any way or their particular fraternity. Lawyers do the same thing too. Architects who have had laws changed to support their particular industries, they will bring information if called upon to do so. The problem is, as a receiving member of the public, who requires information to make informed decisions, I cannot depend on parliamentarians or doctors or any of these individuals to bring information that will be in any way resembling something that would be, disadvantage to them or disadvantage to them in the long run. So I have always thought over these years that, the only people who you would expect to bring the information to you, that will allow you to make that kind of decision, not school teachers or Hillary Beckles from the University of West Indies or any of the research people, or the guys who get involved as journalists. But now realizing, of course, that journalism is anything. You could be, a journalist on food. That makes you a journalist. Mr. Ellis himself is very good at interviewing people. And in those interviews, you get information, but the questions could be asked in such a way as to not offend the guys that are being interviewed and so on. But you still feel as if you're lacking something. You're lacking something. Connecting the dots. you know, it's not that we don't have journalists in Barbados, because we do. The problem is, what kind of journalism do we have? What kind of journalists do we have? Do they dig deep enough? We do have that type. I do know of a person, a journalist, and he was on TV, who actually dug and brought information to the public that I didn't know, which I found a little surprising, and he lost his job. It is not that we don't have that type of individual. It's not that I am something special because I have a way of connecting dots.
Oh, come on. Let's get to something of substance. That's so general that doesn't really mean anything to most of us. Come on. You could do better than this. Let's get down to a specific of one type or the other. It really is vague.
A COVID that requires real answers. Answers that require a way forward that really and truly parliamentarians so far has not given, nor has a doctor as well. Barbados is a very, very sick society. If there's one thing about COVID, it exposes that. COVID takes care of people who are already sick. And if you had the information before you that said that 6 in every 10 Barbadians suffer from hypertension, a sickness that does not even have to be part of this particular campaign, you would have to ask another question. This is not about COVID. It's how is it that Barbados has been allowed to become so sick? And why is it that going forward, there is actually no plan to make Barbados any less sick? We have all the individual, you know, the maverick doctors who come out and do their little bit and make their little shows on radio and TV, trying to do their little part. You know, trying to explain to Barbados using moral suasion that there's some things that you should be doing. But there's some things that can easily be legislated. If you go to Canada, for argument's sake, you can't get a sweet drink. Not like the ones we can get in Barbados. You go buy, like, Ribena and add, like, 2 drops of water if you want to get like, that kind of sweet. But you can't buy anything over a certain level of sweetness in certain parts of the world, because the governments in those parts of the world see it as their responsibility to protect their citizens from the people who manufacture sweet drinks. We had a sweet drink manufacturer, for arguments ago, coming to the radio and saying, Barbadians love sugar. And we are only here to service that particular market.
All right. Thank you very much.